Those of you who are sports fans may have noticed that the bima looks a little smaller. I deflated it in order to give to make the sermon easier this week. Ridiculous. And that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I just couldn't resist the joke. But I am not allowed to make fun of anything, not the Celtics, not the Red Sox, and not the Patriots, because my father, of blessed memory, grew up in Boston, so they are sacred. But really. I remember years ago that my teacher at the seminary, when I was a rabbinical student, Rabbi Simon Greenberg, said to us, "The best sermons you will give to yourself. And if you're telling other people things that they need to hear and you don't need to hear it, it won't be as important to you and the sermon won't be as good." If that's true, this should be the best sermon I ever gave, because this is completely given to me. And it's about cell phones. Now, specifically, it's about cell phones in synagogue, and that's something that I actually don't do, except during the week in my office. But I am increasingly concerned not about the existence of communications and texting and email. That has its own complications, but in some ways, obviously, also its own blessings. As families spread out and people keep in touch with each other, there are lots of ways in which this is a tremendous boon all across human society. I'm not concerned with the use of it, I'm concerned with the inability not to use it. And that plagues us. And one of the ways that you see it best is by how many people check their cell phones in synagogue. And I'm not going to take the approach, "Bad you for doing this terrible thing." First of all, because it's obnoxious. But also because it doesn't address the question of why do people do it. Because it's not, people don't check their synagogues, their cell phones in synagogue because they're bad people. But I think if we understood something about what it is and what it does to us, we'd have a much better chance of being able to change that behavior. I knew sometime during this talk that a cell phone was going to go off. So, one of the things that we know, first of all, and this is the least savory and the most objectionable use of cell phones in synagogues, and I confess sometimes I get upset when I see it, is that people take pictures and videos. Now, I want to say something about that. I understand the desire to take a picture or a video of something in a service that seems beautiful to you. And after all, you're in a sanctuary that uses lights and uses microphones and has instrumentation and has an organ and a choir. So I understand that this is a natural impulse. And again, I'm not here to wag my finger at you and say, "You terrible law-breaking Jews, that you pull out these cell phones." But you realize that every time you take a picture of something, you're creating a memento and not a memory. You are interposing something between you and the experience, and therefore making yourself an observer and not a participant. And in synagogue, you're supposed to be part of the experience. You're not here as a journalist. You're here as a worshiper. And so every time someone takes a picture, what they're saying is, "I'm absent from this experience, but I want to record it to look at later." And that is not at all what synagogue is about. So I hope that first of all, You will take the responsibility. I deputize you to tell people who are using their cell phones, especially to take pictures, don't do that here. It's not permitted. I know that's a hard thing to do. It's like being the person on the plane who, when the rule was against cell phones, would sit, you know, and say, the stewardess asked you to power down your cell phone. It seems to still be on. Right? It's very uncomfortable to do. People don't like that. But in synagogue, no one, not the rabbi, not the ushers, can see everybody recording things. And if you're sitting in the synagogue, I hope that you'll say, you know, the rabbi actually asked me to ask you to turn it off. But there is something that is more powerful and insidious that I think we should be aware of. There are two places where people get their best ideas: in the shower and in synagogue. Because those are the only two places where you can't check your cell phone. I would like to say in the car, but unfortunately that's not true, as we know. And also in the car you have the radio on, so you're distracted by others' thoughts. We're a society that is constantly living in distraction. And if you think that distraction doesn't interrupt the flow and focus of your own thoughts, then you have never tried to write or think something with a child nearby. Because a child's constant distraction makes it very difficult to focus. And having a cell phone is like having a constantly distracting child. In fact, believe it or not, in England they did a study with people, and they gave them an IQ test, and then they gave them an IQ test with their cell phone next to them that showed they had an email in their inbox. They didn't check it, but they knew it was there, and they scored uniformly at least 10 points lower on IQ. Because you can't focus the same way. Because part of focusing, and this may surprise you, is boredom. Boredom is the first process on the way to a good idea. It's not the end. And if every time you feel bored, you distract yourself, you'll never get to the place on the other side of boredom, which is where your great ideas actually are. But instead, what we do is we constantly check to see if somebody said something to us a few minutes ago with the expectation that we will respond. I would like to describe to you the process of something that we used to call writing a letter. You had to find stationery, you had to find pen, you had to find a stamp, and you had to have time. And then you would sit down, and then you had to find the person's address, and you had to figure out if it was worth it. And by the time you were done, it was a true investment of effort. So when you get a letter, it means that somebody has really thought about it. Not true of an email, and certainly not true of a text. It's very easy. So we make demands on each other's attentions all the time that 10 years ago we never would have made. 15 years ago, certainly 50. And you cannot cut it off at the source. That is, you can't tell everyone in your life, don't text me at inconvenient times. You have to cut it off on your end. You have to be willing to say, you know what, for a few hours, I'm actually not going to be reachable by the whole world. And that call that tells me simultaneously that there's an emergency and I've won the Nobel Prize that I have to answer, I'll get it after show. And let me tell you why that's hard to do. Because, as you probably know, every time you see that you have a message or a text, you get a little dopamine surge, a little excitement. We all feel it. But in this, as in many things, a short-term excitement is given at the expense of a long-term investment. You cannot, for example, read a complicated book, or sometimes even a simple one, if you pause every two pages to check your email. And so there has to be a sanctuary, a place away from it. Because I promise you, things will come to you if you are like me and you check your email and your texts with really compulsively unhealthy regularity. I can say that because I'm talking about myself. I cannot tell you how much deeper you can go in those rare moments when you can't do it. Not when you don't do it, but when you can't do it. It's why the writer Zadie Smith, who has written a few wonderful books, said her first advice to writers is write on a computer that is not attached to the internet. Now, she's a professional writer. You would say, why are you on a computer that's not attached? Why not just don't open the browser? But it's hard. And you always know that it's possible. So as you're writing, you're saying, I'm writing now and not opening the browser. Which is not the best way to invest your energy. This is supposed to be a sacred space where we connect to one another and to God and to what is deepest in ourselves. And you cannot do that if you're always looking at a screen. You literally can't. So if you come to shul and you have your cell phone on vibrate, as though that makes it disappear, I'm telling you that you're missing the most important experience of being at shul, of being in the synagogue. And if I could start any movement this morning, it would be leave your cell phone in your car. Really. Leave it in your car. If you leave it at home, so much the better. Don't get me wrong. Mine's at home. But at least in your car. And you know what? Here's the amazing thing about people in your life. They will learn that between, I was about to say 9 and 12, but I'm going to be realistic here. Between 11:45 and 12. I'm just kidding. Between whatever it is, 10 or 11 and 12. In other words, for a short time on Shabbat morning, you're just not reachable. You're just not. I know this will surprise you, but I know many Shabbos observant people who don't use electronic communications on Shabbat at all, and everyone in their life gradually comes to know it, and they're still alive. And some of them are very successful. But however you carve out that time. And I'm not saying it because God said to you, you can't use your cell phone on Shabbat. I'm saying it because it's better for us. It really is, even though it is hard. Of course it's hard. And it takes discipline and time. But what in your life that is valuable doesn't take discipline and time? Everything that is worthwhile is difficult. And to give yourself the space to think and to meditate and to pray in a society in which you don't have to give yourself space ever, it's difficult, but you will be amazed at what comes to you and from you if you have the chance to actually live inside yourself for a brief time. I had already thought of talking about this when I was reading the Parsha, and I thought to myself, okay, I really want to talk about cell phones in synagogue. What can that possibly have to do with 10 plagues and leaving Egypt? And cell phones are not a plague, after all. They're really not. I mean, by and large, I think, with all the bad parts of them, you have to say that they are a great blessing in life. They've saved lives. They keep people in touch with each other. I have a family scattered across the country, and I'm so grateful that we can always be in touch with each other. Or almost all the time, I'm grateful. 92% of the time, I'm grateful that we can always be in touch. But then I realized that you actually could think of it this way. And I'll tell you how I got there, and then I'll wrap it up. So, Pirkei Avot, which is a portion of the Mishnah, begins as follows. Moses received the Torah from Sinai. That's how it starts. So Abravanel in the Middle Ages asked a great question. He said, why Sinai? Moses didn't get the Torah from Sinai. Moses got the Torah from God. Now, he understood that Sinai was supposed to be what's called in English a synecdoche. That is, Sinai represents God there. But it was a really good question, and he had a wonderful answer. He said Moses did, in one sense, get the Torah from Sinai, because he needed to go up to a mountain and be undistracted and have time by himself in order to be able, spiritually prepared, to receive the Torah. And that's what Pirkei Avot is teaching us, is you need that separation in order to receive. So I looked at the plagues again. Now, obviously, the plague of the firstborn was to make sure that the Egyptians would finally say to the Israelites, go, to make things so terrible they would leave. But I thought maybe the plague of darkness was to give the Israelites time and space for the spiritual preparation to leave. Maybe darkness was all about you have to have this brief time, because even though the Israelites could see, according to the Torah, in the plague of darkness, remember, everything shut down. All of Egypt closed. And that meant that all the normal ways of doing had stopped. It was like Shabbat in Egypt. And once the Israelites had reconnected with who they were ready to leave. It really does change you, even for a little while, to not always be at the beck and call of every human being whom you know, and to spend some time with the people who are in front of you and with yourself. So, I said this sermon was given to me, but now I'm going to turn around and give it to you. Do what I do. That is, leave your cell phone somewhere else when you come to shul on Shabbat. Yes. And whatever you do after, and we'll talk about that another time, but whatever you do after, give yourself a Shabbat on Shabbat. Give yourself a break. Be with you and be with God. Shabbat Shalom.